You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Pompeii, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Coco, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're also heard on 94.7, FM 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web.
We are right on www.cetamediainc.com, or you can hit up the radio station, which is 1510 WWBC, and you can listen online just as the show is going on. Listen live, just hit that button. Or if you decide that you want to listen a little bit later, all of our archive shows are there as well, and you can hit the on-demand and just pick the date of which show you want to listen to. After 12 years on the program, Sita, we have quite a few guests, and today is no different. We've got local celebrities right here.
That's
in our
right.
Midst.
I'm proud that this morning our guest today is Mark O'Brien. He's an author and he's a poet, and he lives right here in Cocoa Beach. And we also have a good friend and one of our show's long-running sponsors, Laura Lee Thompson. She is with Dixie Crossroads, and we have Katrina Shaddocks here too with us. But, you know, Ellen, before we go to Mark O'Brien, our author and a poet, and he's going to be talking about his books, we have been on air for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And for listeners who tune in religiously and listen to us all the time, we speak about things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak about things that are going on around our state and in our world. And it's no different that we want to leave a better world behind for our grandchildren and our children. And one of our main topics that we speak about a lot on our show is our environment. And how are we going to leave a better environment for the animals, for humans, for life? I mean, we all wake up every day and we want the same thing. We want clean air, water, food, a good education, maybe a good trade. Maybe we want to open a business. Maybe we want to learn how to save. Maybe we want to learn more about other cultures, other people. And we use our life experiences on our show to make the world a better place.
And the best part is that we find people, like just like the folks that are here today, find people in our community that are the resources of how to, if you don't have the answers, these folks have the answers of
right.
How you can be better. And who is it, Maya Angelou, that used to say, when you know better, you do better? Wasn't that her famous statement?
I think at this point, all of us have something we say, right? I say, be your own best friend. Every day you wake up, be your own best friend, because nobody's going to look out for numero uno like yourself, mm-hmm. right? I met two ladies yesterday who were married, had children, they were doing great. One of them, the husband walked out on her with six kids. The other one, infidelity and adultery and whatnot. And you look at these women who are so beautiful, and have had depression and, you know, just their mind was troubled because everything they knew, they lost it. Their home, their children, their friends, even people from their church were not there for them when they needed them. And they had to pick up themselves, dust themselves up, get cracking, find purpose in life again, and just be their own best friend because nobody's looking out for you, right? So I think that's one of the things that I try to bring out on our show is even though you face adversity, you have to keep going. And I must say that Mark O'Brien, Mark, I met you at the Brevard Book Fair. And I am amazed at your strength. And you are an inspiration.
I'm an author.
Yes.
I'm an author. The strength and the inspiration, I think, can be also classified. Basically, having been given the talents to be an author and a creative.
So,
because in creativity, there's pluses and minuses, and I think that's where, in dealing with adversity, I was able to have the talent to do. I had the senses, the the strength of being able to write and be able to communicate creatively.
And educate the public as well.
And using those skills of creative communication to educate the public, which is a sensitive way to handle situations and to, I mean, people have to learn. They have to confront issues. And if you confront an issue properly, then you can go on and live a better life. But as I said, it's all about being educated, finding out enough information to come to that idea. And as I said, as an author, I use interpretive fiction to display information because it's a very sensitive way of displaying something, opposed to a reporter's account in a newspaper or an editorial where you're dealing with facts which may be a little bit more, which are very rigid and they're true. And truth's got to be there. But when you're dealing with subject matter, you also may want to look into as a strategy interpretation and looking at things in a different ways so you can figure out what it is. What's the adversity? You know, I think if, what is that word handicap actually, which I am, I have cerebral palsy. What is that? Is that, what's that definition? I was shoved in, I was shoved into this situation. It was cerebral palsy from the German measles epidemic of 1965. And we know, what is that? I had nothing to do with it. So the thing of it is, I think you have to confront it and learn about it. And the one thing in my book, The Final Fence, Sophomores in the Saddle, I do, I put on display a character. The character is Eddie Patrick. He's a college student.
Is this Rusky the Raccoon?
No, this is my book.
Okay.
Rusky the Raccoon is a different character.
Okay.
The Final Fantasy Sophomores in the Saddle is set in a college called a university called Southern Dominican Catholic University, which is based on my alma mater, Barry University. And I have a communication arts degree from that school down in Miami Shores, Florida. But the thing is, I took this character, I made it I gave the character two wristbands and two canes. Two wristbands, I was something that happened that he did. He committed suicide. He, what I called, self-destruct. The two canes are there because of something that happened beyond his control. So I took that information of adversity, and I took those two elements of, you either did it to yourself or something, and I compare it, I tell a story, and I put my college years in a fictional way, and I talk about my equestrian life, which was my athletic springboard, my recreational activity, whatever, where I learned to compete, where I learned the basic human skills of communicating with others because I'm learning how to ride a horse and everything. And I put that all together in a story. I put it in a fictional story so the reader, in a relaxed sense, can think about it. You know, maybe they'll ask the question, you know, what is that word handicap really means? Is it something that we promote on a telethon and bring money into it and bring a Las Vegas song and dance into it? Or is it something we need to talk to someone on a one-on-one basis and have the disabled person has the right to figure out what it is so they can go to step two?
Yeah.
Now, Rescue the Raccoon, which you mentioned, is my newest little toy I'm playing with. It's a character. I put in a poem. Rescue the Raccoon is a image of a military person. He's called in, he's a young person who, you know, gets called in by the government to go into a war situation. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it a maturity thing? And in the end, the child comes up and says, and takes care of things in the enemy, where the person on the other side comes in and, you know, demises good old Rusky the Raccoon. Whether that's a good thing or whether that's a bad thing, it's written in a way, it's rhythmic, so the child can pick it up and maybe understand what war is.
What war is, and the children, and the children are the future.
The children.
So Rusky the raccoon is, by writing this book, you're making people think that it has to be another way.
He's a young person. Yeah. Maturity's there.
And we're watching that going on right now in our world with the war.
That's where it was inspired from.
Yeah.
I just had fun with the rhyming words, and yes, I'm living in Cocoa Beach. I'm not as a. I'm not on the border of Lithuania and Belarus. I'm not on the border of Ukraine and Russia. But we have this situation going on, like, you know, and you have to ask yourself, am I a part of this? I'm not a part of this. And the thing is, I think what the children have got to understand is they have got to figure out what war is about and whether this is how you want to solve problems. And once again, let them also learn about diplomacy. Let them also learn that there's maybe sport, the sporting world can evolve again and become more of a peaceful mechanism. Because sports is a way to...
I like what you're saying, because we're all watching what's going on in our world today. And I think most of us who are sitting at home, we do feel as though politicians and world leaders should look at things like diplomacy, sporting, songs, poems, books. People say war is not the answer, but it's not. That's really like a slogan. But what is the answer actually is, at the end of the day, we're all spiritual beings, no matter where we're born, in what part of the world. We breathe the same air. We have the same sunshine. And we have the same heart that beats, and we have red blood. And so I think if you could reach humanity, if Rusky can reach humanity and say, let's break bread together. Let's talk about, you have this in your country, I have this in my country. How can we compromise so that I get your oil and gas and you get my vegetables, you get my cultural difference. You know, it would be a good thing.
That thing
right?
You can take is, you have to, what angers me about this country is spirit, and it comes because I'm disabled, I grew up disabled, I'm not getting out of this. But spirituality is something, in faith, is something that is internal. And that is something, I like to think of it, keep Christ, the guy, Jesus Christ, whoever he was or what we're supposed to learn from him, because to understand Christ, you have to understand both sides. But the thing is, you have to go back and you have to, it's an internal thing. And you have to understand what's inside you. Faith is a major strength. It's a major powerful thing where it'll get you through anything. And part of faith is understanding the whole aspect of it, everything. It's about understanding, and through a lot of this is interpreting. You know, what is a cross? What is being nailed to the cross really means? And being disabled, you take away from that nailing to the cross in certain ways, because you are, a lot of your life is torture because you were taken away from a lot of things. And
you face a lot of challenges and you've overcome them. So do you feel like your faith played a part in your spirituality
faith
in that?
And spirituality plays a major role in it. It's an internal thing. And always remember to keep Christ on in your heart, not on your tongue. Because if you understand who he was and how he was tortured, then you will be able to learn about if you are disabled. Remember, the severe disabled the only thing that they may have is faith. They may only be, the biggest thing in their life may be taking the body of Christ on a Sunday when the priest comes over to the house. Because they can't physically go to church. Now that thing is that taking that host is very in my Roman Catholic upbringing is very, very important.
Yes.
Because it's feeding. It's a symbol of eating. It's a symbol of, and if you have a healthy diet, then you will be at peace too. And I think that bread and the wine are symbols of things, and it's a very, very powerful idea that to be interpreted. And can you joke about it? Yes. Can you make light of it? I'm Irish Catholic. Of course we joke about it. I'm Lithuanian. I'm Sicilian. We take religion to a point, but remember, it's this very thing that you're supposed to keep inside and you're not supposed to abuse it. And I think a lot of our problems we have today is that we are coming to, there's a lot of abuse out there. And I think it comes back to the media, where you have to understand what is factual and what isn't. And you say you're making up your fake news and everything.
Well, it comes down to the media sometimes. It's about money. It's about how much money can you pay people who look good, and the actors actually who are now political pundits. We don't have real journalism. And you know, as you were speaking, I remember that someone sent me something this morning, and he said, health does not come always from medicine. Most of the time it comes from peace of mind, peace in your heart, peace in your soul. It also comes from laughter and love. And I think that's what you're talking about when you speak about your faith, your religion, and how it helped you to overcome the cerebral palsy, having to live your entire life with the canes.
A lot of my understanding of the media is I come from a Barry University. I'm a Barry University grad. We did not, at the time, back in between 1984 and 1988, when it was transitioning into the David Brinkley School of Communication, we had our TV studio was smaller than this radio outlet.
But it was real journalism back then.
But to a point.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, what Barry University gave to me is the understanding of what that journalism thing is. My definition of journalism is the proper way to handle information. And if you go into a situation, you are supposed to observe everything. And then if you go into a situation, you are supposed to ask questions in the same type of, in a proper manner, by being educated and talking respectfully to another person. And if you are to, and then you ask questions, oh, by the way, before you ask the questions, you listen and you observe. Those are our techniques of a journalist. And then you ask the questions and then you report back to another person. Respectfully.
That should be your next book, because we don't have that anymore.
Well, I wrote that.
We don't. You,
well,
I think
that's the idea of Peter DePietrick Pan's Playground. It's a nice, it takes the form of a children's book, but it allows the nurse to be able to communicate with a child. And it is through that, I mean, all my work's evolved because of my journalism background. That's, if you read my books, you see the journalism, skills are there. I write very tightly and everything. I make my point and I get out.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with author and poet Mark O'Brien. He lives right here in Cocoa Beach, and he's written a couple of books, and we'll give you the website in a minute. So Mark, when do you find time to write? Do you find that you write more in the morning or the evening, or where's your happy space that you write?
Well, I write when the visions come. I write, and I don't get, I'm experimenting with short fiction and poetry right now, which is what Rescue the Raccoon is. For example, Rescue the Raccoon was just, I started to play with the words, Rescue the Raccoon, and then the word Moon Ryan Raccoon, and I was able to develop the...
Katrina, can you just say the titles of the two books there, please, for me?
Oh, sure.
So we're going to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, the two books that Mark O'Brien, our friend, author and poet, is here to chat, is chatting about, and our friend Christina is going to say the name of the book.
The first is Peter, the Pediatric Panda's Playground. The second is The Final Fence, Sophomores in the Saddle.
And The Final Fence, Sophomores in the Saddle is published by Austin McCauley, UK, and Peter the Pediatric Panda.
Thank you. So, Mark, what is your hardest scenes to write in your books? What do you find that you, what takes the most difficult?
I was just asked that question by my publisher the other day. And the hardest scene I had to write in the Final Fence was the reflection. Eddie goes through looking a dreamlike reflection of when he committed suicide. And I mean, once again, you're dealing with sensitive information.
Yes.
And when I went back to edit it, it did have a very, very, I was getting some interesting feelings going through that experience. But writing those hard type scenes where you want to get that point out, it was a hurtful time if I may have, I might have experienced it. But because I do write fiction. But when you try to write the stuff that was the points you want to get out, that you want to get off your chest, that's hard. But if you write it out, you feel better. And you can always throw something away. You can always throw a piece of paper or delete something from the computer. But if you actually do it, if you actually do the action, then it won't go away.
Yeah, it's like telling a friend. You get it off your chest, so to speak.
Yeah,
so does your family support your writing?
Yes, they do. All the writing books I've written have been mother, and when my dad was alive, father approved. Those are the ones that are all going out. I don't discuss, unless it's important, I do sometimes email my mom when my short fiction gets noticed or something. And it's been pretty lax and everything. I'm finding myself, I'm keeping it clean so far because I feel like I can always sell it to a school system. I think short fiction is a wonderful tool that an English teacher should be able to use because the children, the students have got to start communicating. And one great way of communication is English class discussion, and interpreting work and sitting in a classroom and interpreting together what an author has written, because that will allow them to discuss what's going on. And my suggestion to teachers is, if you tell a student to go on a writing assignment, put down the red pen and just listen to what they're writing, because they may be getting something off their chest.
Yeah, but nowadays teachers have to be very extremely careful what type of subjects they bring up in school. I mean, some parents think certain things are very sensitive. Like you may have some parents that don't even want to talk about the war.
But if you confront an issue, mm-hmm. and you get it off your chest, the student or the person will come into understanding what it is and then figure out if that's what you want. I would rather see a student write a creative assignment where about an action type, action type Arnold Schwarzenegger type storyline and get it off their chest than actually doing it. And I think if you had that outlet, maybe these the school shootings would be able to.
That's true. Yeah, you can open a conversation.
And conversations don't hurt people. You know, so as I said, that's an interesting way of handling situations.
Right. It's an interesting way of having conversations and having people speak about something that's actually going on in our country. We've had a lot of school shootings. We've had instances where parents don't lock up their guns. We've had instances where people shouldn't have assault rifles in their possessions because their children have access to it. But I wanted to ask you really quick. You've been through a lot in life with your disability and writing about it. What advice would you have for aspiring writers?
Be yourself. Choose a topic that you want to talk about. You can Google research. You can Google research the subject matter. I spent a lot of time in Las Vegas, which had a lot of different places where you could go. And you can go to France or the Paris Hotel to be inspired and everything. But know what you want to talk about. Choose something you want to get your passion about. Study journalism. Study how to go in, make your point, and get out. Because I think those are effective. Be newsworthy.
Did you ever have to cut some of your characters out of a book?
I haven't had that done.
Yeah.
I've made a lot of changes from the time I started writing The Final Fence, which is way back in my college years. When I actually sat down and wrote it, I changed the whole thing from what it is originally. So that's how I don't have to, I don't usually, I use the journalism kicks in then too, because I show a path and I make my statement.
Yeah, you have that vision before you start. So a lot of authors that we've had on have said that, they view writing as a spiritual process. Do you find as you write, it's a spiritual process?
Well, I told you I spent time in Las Vegas, which actually means I spent time in the desert. Do I find those 17 years of being in a desert, going to Mass at Guardian Angel Cathedral, which is right next to the Wynn Hotel Casino? You know, I was in a desert. And when you spend time in a desert, I think it has effects on you. I think I did, when I was in Vegas, I made a deal with something, and it gave me a very powerful writing skills, or maybe it was something God telling me what to do. Cause, yes, I do let go. When I write, I do let go of things, and things do take over, so it is a very spiritual
journey
experience.
So we have 2 minutes left, and I want our listeners to know we're speaking with author, poet, Mark O'Brien. And Mark, you're so inspiring. I could talk to you all day. I mean, it's just amazing because so many people sit down and complain about life and about their situation. And here you are with all the stuff that's been thrown at you from birth, went to college, journalism, wrote your books. I mean,
Barry University,
right here in Florida, right here in Florida.
Sister Gina Lockwood.
Wow, you're just terrific. What a purpose you found in life. So give our listeners your website in case somebody wants to read about your poetry, get your books.
I'm working off my Austin McCauley website right now. You can always find me on Twitter, CGT LAS Newswire, at CGT LAS Newswire. Or you can find me on my website, which is, I think, Austin McCauley. Put down Mark O'Brien, Austin McCauley. That's where you can also buy my books. And if the thing about Austin McCauley is they're always looking for new authors. So they do take unsolicited manuscripts. And the thing is, the Final Fantasy Softwares and Saddle was an unsolicited manuscript. So if you feel frustrated, you don't know where you're going to send your manuscript to, and all you see in the internet is we do not accept that unsolicited manuscripts, Austin McCauley does.
So if I want to give you an extra 30 seconds. So if a child came up to you who has cerebral palsy or, you know, some other illness, MS, a lot of people have MS, people are just getting sicker, younger, stress, people don't have health care, people are worrying about their health insurance, their food, their rent, whatever it is, and they say to you, tell me in 30 seconds or less, what can I do to make my life better, to find purpose with my life? What would you say to them?
Be honest. Be supportive of other people and use the two words, please and thank you. If you go into a room like that, you'll always be able to walk out of the room with your head held up.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Honesty, please and thank you, and support other people.
And respect. Yes. Respect for self as well as others.
If you're disabled, get used to the word excuse me and don't ever blame anyone for what's going on. Just sit there and say, you know, that's nice. And always remember the ADA law also helped other people because buildings got stronger. And the wait staff also actually has a good space to move around when carrying hot dishes because of the ADA law. It's just something to remember. But it's honesty and support.
So be an advocate for what you want. Be the change you want to see in the world, basically. Ellen, take it away. Thank you, Mark. You're amazing.
Welcome.
It was another fantastic
His
person.
His voice is so calming.
How can you be in Cocoa Beach and we not know about you already? But we're going to tune into our sponsors real quick for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here each and every Monday at 1 o'clock. Thank you. But tune in just another 30 seconds or so. We'll be right back.
Yes.
Can I just hang out here?
Yeah.
Of course.
Offer all servicing for free. Your delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9. That's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the web, Ellen.
On the web on SetaMediaInc.com and also on our radio station's website. You can hit the on-demand button and get all of our archive shows from the last 12 years, or you can listen to us live. You just hit that live button, which is on 1510 WWBC.
What a great first segment with author and poet Mark O'Brien, and I just want to read for our listeners one of the quotes that Mark had on his website. It says, children in the future will be the ones who will decide if war is a proper way to handle a situation. 1988 Barry University graduate Mark O'Brien. And I think that's where we will end that segment and start the second segment with our good friend, Laurelie Thompson, who is the co-owner of Dixie Crossroads, which our listeners just heard the ad. And we have Katrina Shaddocks, who is the executive director of Bear United.
Warriors.
Bear Warriors. The bear have become warriors. Bear Warriors.
We're the warriors for the bears.
Katrina is the warrior for the bear.
Katrina is the executive director for Bear Warrior United. And that's wonderful. I've never heard of anybody fighting for beers.
Well, you know something?
Except Bud Light.
They're coming in a whole lot in Orlando. Like, they're hitting neighborhoods now, and people need to be educated. So what a great timing for this.
Yeah.
More building that we do, the more that the wildlife is starting to venture into places that they shouldn't be.
That's right.
And it's not
we're interrupting their habitat.
No, we're screwing things.
They're not coming into the neighborhoods. We've destroyed their forest homes, so they're just being more exposed.
So we'll start off this segment with Katrina Shaddocks of Bear United, Bear Warrior United. Talk to us a little bit about who founded Bear Warrior United and why and how. And how did you get involved with this?
Actually, back in 2015, the state of Florida had their first bear hunt in 21 years. It was horribly managed. There were mothers and cubs that were killed. There were hunters, they label themselves hunters, but they're just cold-blooded killers that bragged about killing an old blind bear in the Ocala area named Grandpa Bear and killing him execution
style. That was on Facebook. I remember
that. Yes. There was also a guy that bragged about killing the mother bear and having to kick her cubs off of her body as they were nursing on her dead body. There was nothing good that came about from that bear hunt. The state agency who mismanaged that bear hunt, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, got the message that they did a horrible job, that these people killing the bears weren't hunters, that have historically had a good cultural importance in our society. This was just a slaughter. This was, you know, trophy killing, and it was mandated wildlife killing, which was unacceptable. But when that bear hunt happened, a lot of us were outraged, and we were able to stop the bear hunt in the consequence or the subsequent years, 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22. There has been no bear hunt because of the public outcry. However, in about 2016, I found out that the FWC had killed bears in two different ways. The first way was with a hunt. We got that stopped. The second way that the FWC was killing bears was with, you know, killing them for going into our trash. So here we were, you know, letting developers, our city and county commissioners, voting to let developers destroy our forests and expose the bears. So we took away their home.
We want to kill them when they're looking for food.
Exactly. So we took away their home. We took away their food source.
Human beings are so miserable sometimes. But we are our own worst enemies, exactly. I swear.
So for killing an animal, for going into a trash can to eat our garbage, isn't that like the craziest thing you've ever heard? So it was just horrible, a horrible display of what humanity had been reduced to in this state. And I happened to be attending an Orange County Commission meeting to ask the commissioners to pass an ordinance that would require bear-proof trash cans and people to secure their trash so they would stop attracting bears into the neighborhood. And the FWC, two biologists for the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, came over to me. And at that time, we were mortal enemies because they had had the hunt. You know, I wanted to save the bears, and they came over to me and they said, we would love for you to do a ride-along with us. And we would love to show you what we have to deal with when people call us to complain about bears in their trash. So I agreed to go on the ride along, and I did. And that is what started, you know, Bear Warriors United. When I saw that a woman called the state agency out to her house that was just trashed with a bunch of junk, and she had at least 7 bear attractants. She didn't secure her trash. Her garage door was broken up, so it couldn't close. There was a refrigerator in the garage that was not secure. And there was livestock that wasn't just secure. She didn't have her chickens secure. And so she actually asked the state wildlife agency to kill this mother bear that came
when
to her
when she
yard
didn't secure her
night.
Property.
Yeah. She said, well, if you don't kill the bear, I'm going to. And then the state wildlife agency biologist said, no, you won't, because that's against the law. You're violating the trash ordinance in 7 different ways. You need to clean this up. If not, we will come back.
I am getting
give you
such an
ticket.
Education because, you know, this is what we need. Thank God for shows like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, because a lot of people don't think about what they're doing to attract the wildlife onto their property.
Right.
They think about just calling the people with a gun to kill the animal.
Well, we're not thinking about what we're doing when they're attracting animals to the property.
Well,
we're
she's
not thinking about
chickens.
What we're doing.
You have the chickens
about
and
fertilizing
the food.
Our lawn that's going into
right.
the lagoon. I mean, yeah. There's like a whole big. Get your pens and paper.
Yeah.
Well, you need to be writing this stuff down.
The kicker to this one woman was, guess where she lived? 500 yards from the Black Bear Wilderness area that taxpayers paid to preserve as a natural lands program in Seminole County, and where people come from all over the world, hopefully, to see a bear.
Yeah.
And like, this is where you say, my people, yeah. What are we doing?
Like, yeah. She didn't pay attention where she was going to live. Yeah. So in addition to the Bear Warriors United, mm-hmm. you are also helping with the manatees.
Yeah.
You're also an advocate and a warrior and a founder for Stop the Starve Manatee campaign, which is heartbreaking because we see them right here in Satellite Beach.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved in that? And you're doing the big bear and now the manatees,
well,
the sea cows.
The Bear Warriors United, I started this organization to help people peacefully coexist with our bears and educate them on what they can do to not attract them. And we give out these trash straps to help them secure their trash and for free. We've done this for over 5,000 trash cans, and we've saved the government and people over $1 million.
What exactly is a trash?
So it's a bear strap. It's made out of nylon webbing with some nuts and some bolts and some straps, and you retrofitted onto existing trash cans, and that secures trash so bears can't get in, and it saves people from
having
to spend $250 on a bear-proof trash can. Or our government. Sometimes our governments are spending the $250 on the bear-proof trash cans. So like I said, it's a great way. People get involved. They want to help the bears. They want to save the bears. And with Bear Warriors United providing these, this free, we call them bear care packages, that has a strap, bear whistles, and educational literature. It's a way for the community all to come together and peacefully coexist with wildlife. And that crossed over into, so Bear Warriors, you know, we ended up helping the bears and their habitat, which is the land that we live on, the air that we breathe, and the water that we drink. And that just went into helping all Florida wildlife, because it's all under assault from developers. Our water quality is horrific throughout the entire state, which brings us to last year when our manatees started dying off at record numbers from starving to death from the water quality that killed their food source. So we are helping the manatees. We have some specific things that we're doing, but I would like for Laura Lee to explain to everyone how the water quality got to where it is and some programs are doing.
Well, I just want to thank you before we go to Laura Lee. You actually went to Tallahassee and you assisted in getting a bill passed.
Yeah, I got one bill passed unanimously. It was the bear poaching bill, which increases fines and penalties for killing Florida black bears, because before this bill was passed, a person may get a slap on the wrist or a $100 fine. You got in more trouble for littering than you did for killing a Florida black bear. So that was passed unanimously. Representative David Smith helped just get that through the legislature in a most wonderful way. And he's going to be helping on another future bill. But I also did a thing last year. I delivered 160 jars of dirty Indian River Lagoon water to Tallahassee with an information sheet about how that dirty water is affecting the manatees and killing off our manatees. And that made a huge impact. Last year, they allocated over $8 million for the manatee rescue programs. And now we just need to get the government on board with expanding what they're calling a feeding program. We need to actually make it a prevention starvation program, which will be require year-round feeding at multiple sites in Brevard County, but feeding their natural food source.
Just to go and throw your trash in and give them.
Right.
Yeah.
The lettuce is great, and that was a great first step, and it was an amazing step for these agencies to take and get the ball rolling. Now we need to step it up. We need to get them nutritious food, which is where their natural food source, hydrilla and hyacinths, come in, instead of doing the romaine, which is a kind of a lot of empty calories. And sadly, with the romaine being put in the water for them, more manatees starved to death this year than last year without the feeding program. So you can have a feeding program, but what we need is a starvation prevention program. You know, and there's a way to make this better and more effective.
Well, you know, we've always said that the only way to get the public on board with something is education.
Yes.
And you're doing a great job. I mean, I could just see you in Tallahassee delivering your jars.
Yeah,
impactful. Were you able to get into their offices, or did you have to give it to their staff?
Oh, yeah, our Florida legislatures, I work very well with all of them across the board, Republicans and Democrats. I happen to be old school Democrat, but some of my biggest supporters and who got me into the Capitol building last year when it was closed down were Republican legislators.
Yeah. Well, it's not what we say, right? It's how we say it. And your message is perfect.
And everyone cares about our wildlife and our environment. So we don't need to be making political issues out of something that doesn't.
That benefits everyone.
Great power play, too, to say starvation prevention. Because, you know, just like humans, you know, if you're bulimic or if you're anorexic,
you go
through so many other, like, bodily problems, right? Like, things start shutting down. So the starvation prevention is a much better message than let's feed everybody. Because then
it's like you feed them on Saturday and Sunday, but what happens Monday through Friday?
Right.
They're starving, right? And that leads us to the nutrient and the pollution in the Indian River Lagoon. Mm-hmm. Because we also now are seeing our fish, crab, shrimp, oysters, everything that used to be in the river, that people would just go there and get the fresh seafood, we're seeing that diminished as well. And that's where Laura Lee is going to talk to us a little bit about Dixie Crossroads, the origins, actually, how the restaurant started, shrimping, and a little bit about the Indian River Lagoon.
And I want a little plug, too, because, like, Laura Lee, she's been on the show quite a few, and she's the only lifelong resident of Brevard County that I know that grew up on the river, grew up and in the loves fishing the river. Industry and loves, like her, your entire family, right? Was part of the river, part of that whole industry. So there's no better spokesperson, spokeswoman for the Indian River than you, as far as I'm concerned. And thank you so much for all you've done.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Ellen and Sita, and I'm happy to be back. And yes, just under 40 years ago, when my parents started Dixie Crossroads, their concept was to use local fresh seafood, and most of it came out of the Indian River Lagoon. We had mullet and spotted sea trout. We had clams and oysters, all of which came out of the Indian River Lagoon. But due to what's happened to the Indian River Lagoon, we've had to change our entire business model. So we still have local Florida seafood, all wild caught, but it's unfortunately it's not coming out of the Indian River Lagoon anymore. In fact, I couldn't even get mullet from the West Coast this winter. We were out of mullet most of the winter because the things that have happened to the Indian River Lagoon, they're happening all over the state. This isn't just a local issue; it is a statewide issue. And the water quality issues, that should be something that our tourism leaders, our elected leaders, everyone should be really concerned with, because eventually it's going to impact tourism, which is the driver of the state's
economy.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, I mean, we are all watching what's happening at Disney. We're watching what's happening with the Indian River Lagoon. We're watching what's happening with the developers who are taking so much land that used to be for recreation. What's going to become of our state if we let our waterways go? We're all watching what's the nitrogen, the phosphorus level, septic tanks that are leaking, people with their grass clippings, their dog, whatever droppings. They're not taking the education that people give them and acting upon it.
Well, and you can talk to any business owner that's lived through red tide, right? Like during red tide, restaurants, the hotel industry, hospitality, they all empty out for the 2 weeks that we have red tide. Now we're like on red tide on steroids, right? Because it's happening now, and it seems to be only getting
worse.
Well,
we saw this morning in Satellite Beach, all those scallops wash up, and Laura Lee already knew what kind of scallops this was. I mean, how do you know these things? I mean, you
life.
Yeah, I didn't even have to say what type of scallops.
Because
she knew what
fisherman.
They were.
because there once was a thriving calico scallop industry in Port Canaveral. There was 150 boats fishing for what washed up on the beach. But oddly enough, my sister just sent me a video that one of the truckers sent to her. And he went out and he gathered up a bunch of those scallops. Now, there's all kinds of theories if you read the article, you know, that there's a disease that killed them and made them weak and they're washing up on the beach. Those scallops that he picked up on the beach 3 days ago are still alive. There's a picture of them in a bucket clacking away. So it wasn't a disease that killed them because they're not dead.
Yeah.
So some other factor made those scallops unearth themselves, unbury themselves. Scallops can swim. They can swim backwards by opening and closing their shell. They open their shell and then they slam it shut really quick, and that pushes them backwards. And that's how scallops move around. So those scallops unburied themselves and started moving somewhere for some reason. And then the wind and the waves. This is my unscientific.
By the end of the
opinion.
Day, the journalists at Florida Day will figure it out. So let's talk a little bit about the seagrass. Yeah, let's talk about the seagrass and the oyster beds. I know the Brevard Zoo and a lot of my friends, people were having these little oyster things put in their backyard, and then now we're hearing about the seagrass and what's happening with the Indian River Lagoon. I mean, the health of the lagoon right now, people need to start paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's a $7 billion a year driver of our five-county region's economy. That was from 2016, an economic analysis from 2016. So obviously, the economic impact of the lagoon is much higher than $7.1 billion a year now. So back to the oysters. The reason that they're trying to get oysters started back in the river again is because oysters are fantastic filter feeders. And they will filter, one oyster can filter 50 gallons of water a day and pull the nutrients and the bad stuff out of the water and store it in their bodies, and then clean water comes out of the oyster. It's been filtered. Also clams too. There's projects now to reintroduce clams from the Indian River. So back in the 80s and 90s, there were hundreds of millions of clams got fished out of the Indian River Lagoon. There was no restrictions back then, and overfishing occurred, and the clams, unlike oysters can propagate by putting spat out in the water, and the spat can drift a long, long way in the water, and then it can settle on another rock or a piling or an oyster a long way away. Well, clams aren't like that. Clams have to be like right next to each other, like less than a foot apart in order to propagate. So when you took all those millions of clams out of the water and off the bottom, then the clams couldn't breed anymore. So the efforts are underway both to reintroduce clams and oysters to the Indian River Lagoon. It has to be done in huge, huge millions of numbers so that they can start filter feeding and filter in the water again. Same thing with seagrass. We went through the algae blooms. They block the sunlight. And the, without sunlight, seagrass is a plant. It needs seagrass. I mean, it needs sunlight in order to prosper. And if you block the sunlight, the seagrass dies. So we had algae blooms. They blocked the sunlight. The seagrass died. When the seagrass died, it put off another big shock of nutrients into the lagoon, and it kicked us off into this cycle of recurring algae blooms that over the years have wiped out the seagrass in the Indian River Lagoon. So seagrass is another great consumer of carbon and nitrates and stuff that go into the water. Seagrass will pull in the bad stuff out of the water and store it in the plants. Well, when you take the seagrass out, you lose the ability of the seagrass to help pull that stuff out of the water.
What do you think caused us to get to this point? I mean, we've had so many leaders in Brevard that do get involved and do their best to improve the health of the Indian River Lagoon. And I've seen the Marine Resource Council, they have their brown bag lunches, they've got groups, cleanup crews. We're trying, but what do you think is happening that we still have a problem? I mean, I know politicians are trying. We're all doing our part. But what is that specific thing that you see happening that's causing the Indian River Lagoon to be in such dire straits?
Well, everybody's helping. And it's going to take time. You have to understand, it took 5 decades
to get to this
bad
point.
Stuff yeah. that we did to the lagoon to get to this point. And it's going to take a long time to get it back again. So it's not like we can flip a light switch and pick one solution and say, oh, well, if we do this, and that, then the lagoon will come back. It's going to take a lot of different things. There's a lot of work that's being done, converting septic tanks onto sanitary sewer, upgrading our stormwater systems, upgrading our wastewater treatment plants to advance wastewater treatment. But it's going to take billions of dollars. And Brevard County residents, they were smart. They voted to tax themselves to try to jumpstart this process, but it's going to take time.
Yeah. I mean, we've had Lisa Soto on, and we were talking about the half-cent sales tax and how we use that and all that. But it's like, you know, every day when you drive by and you see the beauty of the Indian River Lagoon, and you know how important it is to tourism in our state, and you know how important it is to the people who make a living off the river, you know, you tend to say, well, what can I do to make a difference? And so is a restaurant or anybody you know, or maybe Katrina, partnering up with our schools to get more children out there for more education?
Absolutely. Like the Brevard Zoo, I think it's the fourth grade class. Every kid has to go through a lagoon education thing, and a Marine Resources Council. There's a lot of education efforts going on. The biggest thing that people can do to help is write your elected officials, starting with your local city council and mayors and your county commission and all the way up to our state legislators and the governor, and let them know that you care about what's happening in Florida's waterways and you want to see them do more than what they're doing now to fix the situation in our waterways.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Laura Lee Thompson, who is one of the co-owners of Dixie Crossroads, and Katrina Shaddix. And Katrina, boy, it's amazing speaking with you and hearing about what you're doing for the Beer Warriors United as well as Amenities. But I have a question for you, too. I mean, you are so sincere when you speak about what you're doing. If somebody wanted to join your nonprofit and get involved, do you have a website? Do you have a place that you can get volunteers? Maybe people could partner up with you, businesses, to help?
Yeah, we're always looking for volunteers. I actually have a school. It's the Arbor School in Castleberry, and the children there, the students there, are making our bear straps for us. We used to have volunteer events every month to make them, but now those students are doing a bang-up job making our straps. So now we need volunteers to plant wildlife food gardens. And what we've had for the past 6 months are students working for their community service hours for Bright Future Scholarships. We even have some students who have to do probation community service hours. And we have them growing plants at home, sprouting, you know, planting the seeds and sprouting the plants. And then once those plants are ready, they give them to me. And then we do another event where we go out in the woods, and that usually borders the neighborhoods that have, you know, where the forests have been cut down to build these sprawl neighborhoods. We help them secure their trash, and then we plant wildlife food gardens in the surrounding area.
Well, you know, so it does take a village, right? It takes a village. And yeah. All of us, it's all up to all of us to educate ourselves so that we could educate the public on what we're doing. Man, I can't believe we have 1 minute. So, Laura Lee, if you could just give us the address for Dixie Crossroads and a website of someone could go look at the menu and look at all the delicious food. And that, is it the hush puppies?
Corn fritters.
Yeah. Corn fritters. They're so delicious. Oh, my God. So, go ahead. Give us a website.
Easy. DixieCrossroads.com. But we're working on a website about feeding the manatees and stopping the spraying of herbicides on aquatic vegetation in the state. And that website is stopthestarve.org. And hopefully in a couple of weeks, we'll have an easy way for people to go on to that website and to be able to email our legislators. And you can let them know how you feel about what's going on. stopthestarve.org.
Less than 1 minute to go, Katrina. Just give us your website one more time.
Well, I like operating off the stopthestarve.org because right now it's the manatees, but anyone can contact me at bearwarriorsunited@gmail.com or my cell phone 407-702-3576 to volunteer.
Right. And Mark O'Brien, would anyone could Google him on your website as well? Just
right, Ellen, put all of that information on our website as well as our Facebook page. So everybody's links are there. And what a star-studded cast today.
I wanted to talk a little bit about nitrogen and phosphorus, but we'll do that next time. Because these ladies know so much stuff, I can't keep up.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We'll see you next week.